Good afternoon, good evening, or good morning. This is your secret surprise, solo Pauly T episode of the Russell Wolf podcast. And I'm going to get straight into the beginning of AEW Dynamite this week, which started with Orange Cassidy versus Adam Cole. There was some really great character work during this match. I mean, these guys are absolute pros, so you would expect it, and they delivered. Very, very enjoyable. Some really, really top quality physical action as well. But in the end, this was a mechanism to deliver the introduction of Kyle O'Reilly to AEW. So yes, as expected, the guy who exited NXT just a couple of weeks ago is here already, because the Federation decided not to renew his contract, so he was not under any period of no-compete right in. There was a couple of little spots that I would like to highlight, though. One where Adam Cole hit a backstabber on Orange Cassidy, threw Cassidy into one corner and then back into the diagonal other corner. He propped him up onto the top rope of the corner in an attempt to hit a suplex. And as I've mentioned before, I really like how these spots typically don't come across as being obviously planned. So the guy who's taking the bump doesn't just unlock their feet from the middle rope and climb up and get nicely in position and allow the other guy to flip them over his head. He actually fights them off. They usually fight them off. And in this case, he did fight him off. He ended up hitting a really solid DDT and got a near fall. There was another spot where Adam Cole missed a boom kick and ended up slamming his knee into the steps, which I couldn't help but think must have been painful, because really hard to be able to do that without generating some serious impact. There was some brilliant comedy work, of course, from Orange Cassidy with lots of his sloth moves. There was a great spot where Cole hit his Panama Sunrise. He attempts to pin Orange Cassidy while lazily lying on top with doing Cassidy's pockets move, and Cassidy kicks out. Crowd was really hot at this point. This was very, very enjoyable. Then, another spot where Cassidy avoided the boom kick and then hit his beach break flip to get a pin. He pulled Adam Cole's left arm in towards Cole's body, and so he was unable to use it to fight off to avoid the pin. But Cole used his right arm to avoid the pin, so yeah, it was pretty cool. Taz was unusually leaning onto the face side during this match, which is the beginning of the broadcast. Very interesting. Yeah, so look, Kyle O'Reilly appeared. The as yet unnamed tag team, who used to be called the Undisputed Era, ran all over the best friends. At the end, the Young Bucks came out looking around like, "What's this all about?" Like jealous girlfriends. Look, this was the first match. I'm not even sure if there were any ad breaks. It flowed so well. And you know, ending with O'Reilly appearing, so that was the payoff we all wanted. I gave this a very solid A, or something you could alternatively think of a 9 out of 10. Next up, we saw a promo from which began with an interview by Tony Schiavone of Hangman Adam Page. Now, a quote unquote interview in AEW is usually the vehicle for someone to rant for 10 minutes after answering one question, or they answer one question and then get interrupted and it becomes Tony Schiano becomes irrelevant. And in this case, it was the latter. We found out with a taped promo just before this happened that at the very first TBS version of Dynamite on January the 5th, the rematch between Hangman Adam Page and Bryan Danielson for the world title will happen. So Hangman Adam Page says to Tony Schiavone that when he looks back and considers the 3 years that he's been a part of AEW, he never felt less of a champion than he did last week after drawing with Bryan Danielson after 60 minutes, and that the only feeling he has is disappointment. So straight after this, Danielson comes out with the microphone. Wait. He said wait many times. He referred to Paige as an entitled millennial cowboy who still has the belt around his shoulder but is disappointed. We should feel so sorry for him. But, you know, really, who should be disappointed? It's the AEW fans. Because he, or I, as in Bryan Danielson, as we're speaking, kicked your ass for 60 minutes. And if anyone should be the champ, it should be me. We've got a match on January 5th, and I'm going to kick your ass again. The only reason he managed to be unsuccessful in beating him was because he had a little bit of a sore leg from when his match with John Silver. That was great. So he makes it clear that he's not going to wrestle until this match on January 5th, which is quite unusual considering leading up to the match, he has been wrestling every single week. So he makes a proposal that if Adam Page stalls, and that's the reason why it went to 60 minutes, because he stalled. Anyway, that we have judges. Okay, right. So Page comes back, says, look, I think that you could have been more creative here. I was thinking about all these other options. He was thinking about things like a ladder match or a cage match or no time limit even was one of them. Anyway, he says, if we keep time limits, let's get some old guys some paydays. Sure. But you better pay them in advance because it's not going to be necessary. And I'm not going to let someone tell me I'm a B-plus player. So he's not keen to get a judge to offer criticism of him and making a very, very clear reference to the way that Bryan Danielson was treated in the Federation. Now, this for me was an A-plus promo. I love the fact that AEW don't do many rematches because it was getting so incredibly tiring to see the same wrestler against the other, you know, his opponent over and over and over again, every week. And sometimes even one pay-per-view to the next pay-per-view. And it was like, come on, be more creative, move on. So, look, AEW don't do this very often. They're doing it in this case. And look, these are two of the best in the game. One arguably is the best in the world. And I'm not talking about Punk here. Look, this is instantly delicious. I gave this A+ for the promo. We saw a pinnacle promo where Wardlow's babyface turn has been teased again. Wardlow squashed some dude for a 1 minute and 10 seconds match. Look, last week's one was fine. In fact, it was good. It was great. I think I gave it an A. This one, like, I don't know. Do we really need to see these over and over again? It was 1 minute and 10 seconds. So, whatever. C. next up, we had a We had the one of the semi-final matches of the TBS tournament. This was Nyla Rose versus Ruby Soho. And, look, I found this to be a pretty typical sort of underdog match where the face barely appeared likely during the match until the very end, pretty much like all of Darby's match. They're getting quite tired for my liking. I much prefer to see two gladiators going at it where you equally believe that any one of them are going to, you know, could be the winner at the end. C-. It was a 10-minute match. Again, Taz was barely playing heel. He even sang along to Ruby's music at the end. Yeah, look, I didn't even mention what happened. So, yeah, at the end, Nyla Rose was dominating for most of the match. Then she dragged Ruby Soho up to the top rope, into the corner, onto the top rope. And it didn't really just seem to serve any other purpose than to just set herself up for Soho to hit her no future finisher, which she did, and she won. It was just, after, you know, 9.5 minutes of being pretty much thrown and kicked around the ring, I don't know, I just didn't dig it. But that's me. Anyway, next we saw a pretty vicious promo from Serena Deeb setting up another seldom used, but this one, again, I think it's worthwhile. Seldom used regular program style feuds. So, yeah, this one is Serena Deeb versus Hikaru Shida, two top stars of the promotion. Next, we've got Malakai Black and Griff Garrison. Now, this was a 3-minute match. I kind of expected that it could have been a little bit more of a squash, but you know, Garrison did have some decent few spots where he was on top. There was in particular a huge suicide dive over Malakai Black's head and shoulders in their early stages. And at the end, look, really, I just thought it played out to be Black showing off just how good he is to watch. He's a dominant badass who's creative and doesn't depend on one or two moves to get the job done. It's no wonder he's so popular and is struggling to generate heel heat. And here in this particular match, they didn't even try to make him seem to be, you know, a scary monster or you know, spooky. There was no black mist silliness or no eye poking or anything like that. It was just a dominant match. It was really good, really good. I'm looking to. It was just a three minute match that. Just a solid B for this one. Then we made it to the main event, and this was Tony Khan's Christmas present to the fans. I reckon this is potentially a match of the year candidate. Now, we have to consider, when you say such outlandish things like this, that keep it in context. Okay, so would I say that this was better than the Young Bucks versus the Lucha Bros in a cage? I don't think it was, but it's not the same context. And hopefully you understand why once I talk through it. So it started off with Sting coming out wearing CM Punk fists on his face. And it was so detailed and so... It looked brilliant. I was very impressed. What a great start. What a great first image to see. He was followed quickly by Darby wearing Sting war paint on half his face. And it was retro style. I'm not sure exactly which era this was from. This was kind of dark pink, maybe sort of purple color with a black outline. I'm not exactly sure, but it's definitely Sting style of one stage. Then CM Punk comes out wearing a different version, different classic style of Sting wall paint. And this is 80s blonde Sting. And he's wearing these, very colourful wall paint around his eyes and Sting long trunks from the same era. Wow, what a presentation. I couldn't help but stretch a bloody silly dumb grin across my face. Oh, this has started off so well. And of course we had not just one team involved. The other team were the amazing team working duo. They just, when I've got to say team again, they work so well together, of FTR, who follow the rules. The dastardly FTR. And I must say, Dr. Damien has convinced me with his regular glowing commentary about these guys. He's convinced me too. They are amazing. Anyway, so we had the dastardly FTR with their trio, their partner in this trio being the chicken shit heel of MJF. And it was fantastic. I mean, he's one of the best things out in wrestling at the moment. Absolutely. This the biggest early spot in this was an amazing, intense cannonball suicide dive from Darby Allin. God, he's good. Sting at 62 is doing so much good work. This match had nostalgia pops like crazy. Like, yes, this guy is just, he is Sting, who's been out there performing since the 1800s. he's been going and going and going. And I can't, I'm stunned at how well he's doing. Obviously the workers in the ring have to be safe and they have to sell well for him and make him, make sure he doesn't hurt himself, the poor old dude. But he's still doing really, really well, and he's really in incredibly physical shape for a guy that age, and he's performing so well. He doesn't need to be in the ring. He just needs to be alongside Darby, be a presence, be a coach out the back. But he is in the ring. He is. And he gave us this performance today, which gave the fans this incredible nostalgia feel. Not only was he there, but we had Darby and CM Punk, three of the biggest stars in wrestling. CM Punk and Sting, two of the biggest stars in the last four decades of wrestling. So those guys were wearing, Sting makeup to refer to his earlier incarnations that were in Greensboro. This is just nostalgia. And wrestling fans love nostalgia. So yeah, the pops for nostalgia was the needle was busting out on the far right side of the scale for this one. This ended up with a bit where Sting threw MJF into the barrier heads first, and he, I'm not sure if it was over the top rope or if it was through them, like the top and the second rope, but he was thrown with so much force, and FTR tried their best to save him and give him a soft landing, but he still hit his head on the concrete floor. It looked really dangerous, but he came back okay, so all right, good. I mean, I don't want any of these people to hurt themselves. Then the 62-year-old dude jumps off the top rope onto them for this crossbody splash. Oh, my God. wow. And then in the final spot, MJF was in the ring. CM Punk was about to line him up for the go to sleep, the GTS. Dax comes in, pushes him out the way, and basically, you know, takes the bullet. Punk hits the GTS, knee to the head, knocks him out. Sting picks him up, applies the Scorpion death drop. Then Darby jumps in from, you know, 10 meters away from the other side of the ring to some crazy coffin drop. It was just amazing. This was a 26 and a half minute match. I'm going to give it a double plus, 11 out of 10. It was an amazing spot fest. Tony Khan's Christmas present to the fans. Loved it. Whole episode, give it an A. Then we move on to Rampage, and I couldn't help but think when the show was about to begin, I was thinking, Cody has to win. That's all that we need from this episode. And why do I say that? Well, so it's only been a couple of weeks since I've realized what was actually going on. Leading up to that, for months, I've been thinking, what is Cody doing? He's pissing the fans off. He's being that same Triple H or John Cena character who's got the fucking golden shovel and buries everyone and just writes himself into all the best spots and gives himself all the victories. And then we finally realized, yes, he is doing it. And that's exactly why he's doing it. He's taking the fucking piss. Oh dear. Yes. When he did that stupid burning table spot in that match and earlier in that match anyway, when he pulls out the golden shovel and finally I realized. And then he did that beautiful bit last week where he tells Sammy that he's lucky kid because he'll be accepting the open challenge and taking on Sammy for the TNT title. And then he shaped to go into the heel tunnel and then realized, oh no, that's right. I have to go over here because I'm a face. Yep. By that point, I was all in. I'm totally behind it. Bring it on. Troll the fans. Sure. If they don't get it, then deal with it until they get it. Because I didn't get it for a long time. And then finally, I got it. And even Damo said to me, Dr. Damien Gibson said to me quite a few times, Are you sure this isn't the plan? And I was like, I don't think so. Silly me. Anyway, so that's what I wanted to happen for this episode. The episode which started off with Jungle Boy against Isaiah Cassidy. So the plan here was to injure Jungle Boy and therefore cause the Jurassic Express to lose their number one ranking. It had a bit of, sort of decent back and forth. There was pretty good physical action, a few flips and kicks and yeah, it was all right. There was a bit of outside focus for a bit where Christian got involved. Then ended up with Jungle Boy hitting a snare trap. 9 minute match, decent, not great, B minus. Next up, we saw Miro in his white void again. I'm starting to think who is Miro talking to? Originally, a couple of weeks ago, when the last time we saw this, I thought he was talking to his god, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it is. Is he just talking out to the distance? Talking to the general other, or is there a person? Is he talking to Cody? Is he talking to Tony Khan? I don't know. I'd like to know. I'm sure we'll find out. But it's not his flexible wife. Anyway, next up we see while the graphics are on screen introducing the Hook versus Bear Bronson match. That Hook has the number one selling shirt on shopaew.com. This is just a white t-shirt with the word hook over the chest. Nothing else. I must admit, I haven't checked the listing. I don't know if there's anything on the back, but the one they showed on screen was just a white t-shirt with H-O-O-K. This guy is hot. So the cold-hearted, handsome devil saunters right around the ring. He quickly demonstrates his strength by dragging Bear Bronson by the knee, attempting a single leg crab. A minute later, when Bronson is showboating, he quickly locks in a submission that Bronson barely breaks out of. He bounces out completely, no selling a spike to the head, slams Bear Bronson down on his head, hits a few crossface strikes, then gets him into the red rum submission. This was 3 minutes and it was an A. This guy's a fucking star. You pick a go and reach over and into your bookshelf and grab your dictionary and look up the word cool. I guarantee you there's a photo of Hook next to that definition. My God, he is gonna be huge. Next up, we saw a promo from Eddie Kingston and Daniel Garcia. Yet again, Kingston calls Ortiz monkey. This made me feel very uncomfortable. That's not cool. After this, we see legit Layla Hirsch versus Chris Statlander. Look, there was some solid back and forth in this, which I really did enjoy because presented Layla Hirsch, who is like 4'10". I kid you not. I think she's maybe, if she's not 4'10", then it might be like 4'9" or something like that. She's tiny. And Chris Stanley is not. She's a very tall woman. It was presented really well. Some really good, decent back and forth. And the segment that I enjoyed the most about this one was the finish. A spider crab submission. I have never seen that before. And I really liked it. Really creative from Chris Statlander. So 6.5 minute match. B+. Really good stuff. Then we get to the main event, and Cody's entrance seemed to be a little bit more, a little bigger and more grand than usual. And it's pretty obvious now that after that stupid table spot a couple of weeks back, that that ugly neck tat is not the only unfortunate body modification, can I say, body damage, body scarring that Cody is going to wear for the rest of his life. He's got some serious scars on his back, and I really think they are not going to fade away. Early on, we had some let's go Cody sucks chants, and this is where it really became apparent to me that Cody is John Cena. Because back when I used to watch the Federation, we would see this over and over again. The crowd would be chanting, let's go Cena, Cena sucks, let's go Cena, Cena sucks. And this is what we had today. Let's go Cody, Cody sucks. Except, Cody has way more moves than John Cena. Yes. Many, many more moves in his arsenal. there was an interesting spot outside where Sammy missed a shooting star press. He didn't quite land on his face or anything bad like that, but he landed awkwardly on his ankle, so he could have done some twisting. He did sort of lean over and sort of favor it for a moment. Cody took advantage of this, and he really began to dominate. He spent a lot of time in the middle of the ring attempting to submit him. Sammy powered through and flipped out into a near fall, which was pretty impressive. But then Cody came back. He continued with more stretches and submissions, slowed down the pace again, which is good. I really like it when you make sure that the story is able to be told properly. He's really dominating. Really, at this point, it does not look like Cody has it. Sorry, Sammy has a chance. And he has been working on Sammy's arm so often up to this point. So when Sammy has a chance to actually break free and attempt some offense, he has to use his left arm because his right is so sore. So it really doesn't seem like he's gonna be able to mount any serious offense. However, he powers back, hits a crossroads, yes, a crossroads on Cody, and then a 450 splash on the outside. So we had a chance to sort of catch our breath for a few seconds. So the pace slowed down a bit after this. But then Cody quickly counters while they're out and throws Sammy into the first couple of rows of fans. Now, these guys, I think they were wearing the same uniforms. They might have been a visiting sports team or something. So I would expect they knew what was going on and they were okay. They didn't mind someone being some, you know, a 100-kilo man being thrown into their laps. Back in the ring, Cody hit the crossroads, gets a near fall, because Sammy had just fought back and kicked out. But he's looking really limp. It's really not looking good. Somehow, like he just seems to do it all the time, even though he's looking really, really it's about to be all over Red Rover, he fights back. He manages to get Cody up for the GDH, the go to hell, but Cody kicks out. Cody's down on the mat after this kick out, and Sammy climbs up to the top rope in the corner, hits his 630 senton, but Cody pulled the knees up. So Sammy is really sore after having those knees driven into him. Cody grabs him, hits crossroads, hits another crossroads, then Tiger Driver 98, power bomb, it's all over. This is a 15-minute match, and it is a solid A. This had to happen, people. This had to happen. We got to keep this story going. This has been really good, long-term storytelling that I couldn't even read for too long. And I don't know, the more the fans don't like it, the more it's working. You might not get it. I get it now. He's taking the piss. He's showing the Federation how annoying it is when someone who has so much power writes themselves into these glorified positions of success over and over again, and the fans know that they have the power. In this case, Cody is an EVP. He actually is a senior member of staff at All Elite Wrestling. not the son-in-law of the CEO, or not the chief operations officer, but he is an EVP. Look, it's been a really enjoyable couple of broadcasts of AEW Wrestling. I absolutely love Tony's Christmas present to the fans, that wonderful main event of Dynamite. I hope you did too. I hope you enjoyed this little Secret Surprise solo Paulie T edition of WrestleWolf. There might be another one, let's see. Otherwise, we'll be both back in a couple of weeks, and hope you're all keeping safe and avoiding the sicknesses, and are enjoying your holidays. Keep it up, kids. If you enjoy this podcast, we would love you to give us a review, share it with your friends. Anyway, y'all, like Damien says, may your wrestling be a good wrestling.